There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 882, April 26th. 2021, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. The question is, who will be the big flavor and fragrance of the Portuguese Grand Prix? The Old Spice or Max Factor? Back to Mr. Rogers, the Yves Saint Laurent of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, sprint race added to the British Grand Prix. Dale Earnhardt would have been 70 this week. So we have a special from our friend, Philip Pegler. And we will be auctioning off a bottle of number 3 wine from Childress Vineyards in North Carolina. And that I will mention in a few moments. I also want to mention that we have Christopher DeHardy, the oldest F1 Weekly fan in the world. His interview from Barber Motorsports. And just a reminder, we need your contributions to keep this program on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you'll want to. I want to thank Costanza Tedesco. Thank you. Your F1 Weekly Cup is on the way. And for the month of May, F1 Weekly will auction off a rare bottle from Philip Pegler's personal wine cellar. And this is a bottle of Childress Vineyards, number 3 red wine. And of course, the bidding will begin at $70. And whoever contributes the most for the month of May will receive this fine, rare bottle of Chateau Childress from North Carolina. I want to thank everybody who participates ahead of time. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. So we have a fully loaded burrito and a fully loaded Nathan's hot dog today. So that's very exciting. How are things on the left coast, sir?
The left coast is very busy. As you see, the racing is happening all over the globe. And the host is busy making sure Nasser doesn't have any downtime.
Very good, sir. That's very kind of you. Well, the good news is round 3 is coming up Sunday at the beautiful Portimão circuit in the equally beautiful Algarve region of Portugalistan. Now, last year, your favorite driver did a triple play, pole, fastest lap, and victory in car number 44. But since then, Red Bull has given wings to the GP2 engine, and we may see a new non-Mercedes championship leader after the race. Max was on the podium last year behind the 2 silver/black arrows. And talking of Max, he and his papa were at the Monaco Historic Grand Prix, which I watched some of the action on YouTube this past weekend. And after seeing Jean Alesi in a Ferrari there, Max has picked up a lot of new motivation, and I think we may see the score 2-1 in his favor. Now, obviously, LCH Lewis Carl Hamilton is not going to roll over and play dead like a Trinidad and Tobago parakeet. He still has a lot of speed and experience, and equally important, a Rubinho who will not rattle his cage within the team. So 2-1 most likely will be the score, Mr. Rogers. What say you, Lewis 2 or Max 2?
Well, Nasser, you know, everybody's going to be playing catch-up when we get to Portugal, including Vettel and Ricciardo and Tsunoda. So a lot of people are going to be saying, you know what, I've got to seriously get my crap together. And LCH is going to be doing the same thing. He knows that Max is ready to stomp. So LCH is going to be in fine, tip-top condition. And I hate to say it, but since he had the Triple Crown last year at Portimão, I say he may do it again.
Yeah, well, you know, under normal circumstances, it's hard to imagine that race winner will not be Lewis or Max. So I think we're in for a good race, and if it's a combination of the first two races, it's going to be very, very good and absolutely fantastic for the season-long championship battle. Now, rain is the forecast for 4 of the 5 days of the week, but weekend is going to be sunny and dry, so I hope there's no, you know, kablamo or big crash or anything like that. And this is a perfect setting for this track, which has elevation changes, looks beautiful, and does not have what I would call 30 miles per hour left and right hand turns as we see on street courses. But that's another story. Now, talking of catch-up, great expectations. Sergio Perez needs to be on the podium. The first two races have not gone his way, but a lot is expected from him, both by fans and his team. And him out qualifying his teammate at Imola was machismo. So let's see what kind of performance he can put in Portugal. I think, and tell me if you agree with me, Perez is an additional pending headache for Bottas.
You're absolutely correct. Perez, with his aggressive style, good starts, if he stays out of trouble, could get him tangled up with Bottas.
Yes. Now we come to Daniel Ricciardo. The Honey Badger did not sign with McLaren to be Norris's T-boy. I expect him to bounce on his young teammate soon. How soon, time will tell. Hopefully this weekend we will see the smiling assassin slay the competition, and a shoey with McLaren is not a bad idea. Not sure if that will get a tattoo on Zach Brown's LA skin. It's very good to see the team being competitive after so many years in the doghouse, where all the bones went to the baby who came back. Sorry, Stoffel. Sir, do you see Daniel overpowering Lando after two not-so-Danny Rick-like races?
He's going to try, but I'm afraid Lando, he's on his second wind. All of a sudden, he's so much more comfortable in the car than Ricciardo. Let's put it this way. He found a little secret, and I think Lando is going to be once again the prickly teammate that Ricciardo was hoping to beat.
So basically, he's doing to Ricciardo, at least in the first two races, what Ricciardo did to Sebastian Vettel at Red Bull. As they say, what goes around comes around. Okay, now another guy that needs to catch up and get some Hellman's Mayo also is George Russell. It's about time for him to give Williams a point or two in a while. He is very talented, which was announced to the world and Valtteri last year in Bahrain. And I think he is also smart and dedicated enough to put that carambolage from Imola behind him and get going. Your take on Russell in Portugal, Stan?
Well, he's got to redeem himself. This is it. Stay out of trouble. Keep Toto happy. Toto is your carte blanche for the future. So you need to keep Toto happy. And if you have to, ask Bottas how to make his favorite salad.
There you go. Now, you mentioned Yuki Tsunoda. With backing from Honda, blessing from Red Bull, Yuki is in good hands, and he needs not to develop the same reputation the other Honda-supported driver developed and still maintains to this day. I am talking about Sato San. Before winning Indy, not once but twice, Sato San was British F3 champion and Macau Grand Prix winner. And I think Yuki Tsunoda, you know, really, he doesn't need to. I think he's doing what Gasly was doing at Red Bull with Max, trying to match his teammate right away, which I think he should take his time and just focus on finishing races and then maybe halfway through the system, through the season, try to pounce on Pierre Gasly, because Pierre Gasly has been doing pretty decent since he, guy won a race, so that's very good, since he came back to Toro Rosso. And now we come to a very common situation around the world, not just in Formula One, the misery loves company bubble. This includes Formula One's most successful team. They have already declared from the very top of the organization, corporate structure, that they do not expect to win races. So that's really reassuring and refreshing for the young drivers. The bubble also includes a driver they released last year, Sebastian Vettel. Sad part is now ex-Grand Prix drivers from Gerhard Berger to Jacques Villeneuve are now ganging up on the four-time world champion, saying he is beyond his sell-by date, which is very disappointing. But peak performance is not permanent privilege for any driver. And if you are getting dusted by Lance Stroll, maybe it's time for a new suit, this time from Ralph Lauren, who is good friends with Lawrence, and I'm sure he can get him a deal or two. And I think Sebastian will look very nice in a three-piece suit. What say you?
Yes, Sebastian is preparing to wear not three-piece suits, but overalls. I think he's going to become a farmer and get into organic farming, just like I think Jody Scheckter went into interesting farming techniques. So it happens. I think it's good for him. And maybe some of those organic herbs and arugula could go on Jarno Trulli's pizzas.
Speaking of Jarno Trulli, I was just, before you call, I was listening to Beyond the Grid interview with Tom Clarkson, and the guest was Mr. Jarno Trulli. So interesting conversation there. Okay, so now good things come in three. And that is the number of sprint races, which you alluded to earlier in the podcast, approved by FIA for this season on Saturday. Very exciting, and I like it. Two of these races will be at Silverstone and Monza, and third event will be announced later, and it will be outside Europe. I will not be surprised. I thought it was going to be in Montreal, but it might happen at, the sprint race would be very good at Suzuka or Interlagos. I definitely do not want to see a sprint race in Monte Carlo or Singapore. What say you?
I'm ready for sprint races. I think it could add another level of excitement, especially if it's exciting.
Would you prefer a sprint race at a place like Spa, Suzuka, or Singapore, or Baku?
No, we need sprint races at fast circuits. Monza, Silverstone, Spa. Let's take care of business. Let's not be goofing around.
Yes, we don't need PC-ness in sprint racing. Thank you very much. Okay, now points will be awarded to the top three. Three to the winner, two for Bottas, meaning whoever is number two, and one for third step of the podium. So that's the motorsports Formula One. I'm really looking forward to the Portuguese Grand Prix. And sir, it's at a very convenient time, at least for me, 10 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. So that's 7 o'clock your time.
7 works really well for me. I like it.
Yes, sir. You can go to 7-Eleven, get some Slurpee or coffee and some donuts and watch some motor racing.
Exactly.
And sir, some interesting news. More American investment in Formula One. McLaren has sold its Woking headquarters, which was designed by Mr. Norman Foster, very famous architect, to an American real estate company called Global Lease Network for £170 million. So that's over $200 million. And what will happen? McLaren will lease back the building. And all their division, automotive, racing, and applied division, will continue to work in the facility on a 20-year lease. So that's a very interesting. And talking about moving of people and institutions, Star Power to Red Bull. Red Bull Powertrains, the new company that will be running Honda engines, they have announced the appointment of Mercedes High Performance Powertrains Head of Engineering, a chap by the name of Ben Hodgkinson, as technical director. which does not surprise me. I had an inkling they were going to hire somebody from a winning organization, and so this is no surprise. This gentleman's experience includes developing race engines for World Rally Championship. And you know, Gunther Steiner's background is also WRC, as was the background of Ove Andersen of Toyota F1 team. He also designed turbocharged engines for Le Mans and Ilmor Racing, which, you know, became Mercedes AMG high performance powertrains, Mario Illin and Paul Morgan. So that's the main news of the world of Formula One, sir. Anything else before we take a break, senor?
Well, before we take that break, I've decided this is a really good piece, so we're going to put it in before Motorsports Mondial, and I'm talking about Philip Pegler's piece on Dale Earnhardt. Dale Earnhardt's birthday is April 29th, and he would have been 70. Of course, that tragic death on the last lap of Daytona, which took Dale's life, and Philip was there. So, Philip, an outstanding job. Please take it away.
For those of us who treasure the history and heritage of Formula One, we look back and revere the legends of the sport, like Fangio, Nuvolari, Moss, Clark, Stewart, and Lauda. In more recent years, my generation has experienced Prost, Mansell, Senna, Schumacher, Alonso, and Hamilton. And we continue to watch what many concede is the beginning of the changing of the guard once again, with the rise of Verstappen and Leclerc. The pipeline of talent never dries up, and there is always a story. Something exciting is usually about to happen, leaving us with something to talk about for weeks, months, or even years to come. IndyCar has also enjoyed its own history and heritage, and we talk of Andretti, Foyt, Rutherford, and Mears within the same vein. But there's another genre of motorsport here in the United States, and even though some of us have looked down our noses at Le NASCAR, the series has enjoyed and earned its rightful place in the storied timeline of international automobile racing. NASCAR for sure has its own history and heritage, its own legendary drivers, and it is to one of those great men that I offer this tribute. Thursday, April 29th will mark what would have been Dale Earnhardt's 70th birthday. For the man who grew up in the small mill town of Kannapolis, north of Charlotte in North Carolina, and who we last saw racing on the high banks of Daytona on that fateful Sunday afternoon in February 2001, it is hard to imagine where Father Time might have taken Dale Earnhardt had he survived the accident which took his life on the final lap of the 43rd annual Daytona 500. For whatever reason, I was there that afternoon, and I remember feeling as though my entire life had been shattered before my very eyes. Dale Earnhardt, hero to countless thousands of Americans, was my hero. He was the everyday hard-working American who embodied the American dream and lived it proudly. He came from nothing and left this world as a man who had achieved just about everything. His legend was great. His talent was undeniable. Earnhardt could do things with a race car that very few could have done had they been in his seat. The fact that this was a stock car should in no way diminish his level of greatness, nor should we separate him from the other legends of motorsport that we have chosen to revere so greatly. One of Dale Earnhardt's great skills was his ability to understand the air around a race car and the effect that it had on a vehicle's dynamics. In the late 80s, following a spectacular accident involving Bobby Allison at Talladega, NASCAR implemented the use of carburetor restrictor plates on the air intake manifolds of its race cars at Daytona and Talladega, which dramatically reduced engine horsepower and ultimately the top speeds of its cars at the sport's two longest and fastest super speedways. The advent of the restrictor plate created a level of parity among competitors that was previously unseen, and the four races at those two respective tracks each year became events where a first-time winner was possible. It actually was really possible. And indeed, history proves it. Those two tracks have seen more first-time winners than any other track in the sport's 70-year history. Through all of that perceived equality of restrictor plate racing, there emerged a king. Daytona and Talladega became the personal playgrounds of Earnhardt, where at the former he would log an incredible 34 victories across the three different racing series. And at Talladega, he recorded 10 NASCAR Cup Series victories alone, the last of which was in October 2000. And again, for whatever reason, I was at Talladega that afternoon. And to steal a phrase from Nigel Mansell, I witnessed the impossible become possible, as I saw Earnhardt drive from 23rd to 1st in the final 5 laps of the race to claim his 76th and final career victory. It was a 205-mile-an-hour masterclass in race car aerodynamics given by a 49-year-old 7-time NASCAR Cup champion. Witnessing his car positioning, his skill, his anticipation and the timing of the movements of the car among the pack of 30 to 35 other cars was something to behold. If you have a moment, I encourage you, look at it for yourself. Go on YouTube. It's just a 5-minute clip from NASCAR's archives. Look up 2000 Winston 500 final laps. You'll see it for yourself. It's outstanding. We all have our heroes. And there are heroes for our own very personal reasons. I guess Dale Earnhardt was the daddy that I lost as a little boy. The man who was successful and ascended to the top of the sport that I had fallen in love with as a young man. He was that beacon of light that I saw as I looked out of my window from the world of theatre, dance and music that I've grown up in and worked in my whole life. And he was exactly who I would love to have been had I been given the chance to do it all over again. Many of us draw a line under Formula One. It's our benchmark of greatness when it comes to motorsport, isn't it? The skill sets required for driving a Formula One car differ greatly from those required to drive an Indy car, and even more so to driving a stock car. But are they really any greater? I guess it's debatable. I'm not so sure they are, to be honest. You know, driving a stock car at Talladega for 500 miles, which is 188 laps, non-stop for 3.5 relentless hours of 3-wide side-by-side pack racing competition, always seconds from disaster at any given moment. Surely that's right up there. These gladiator drivers, who live to drive their sponsor-decorated 800-horsepower Roman chariots around these great oval racing coliseums of America 36 weekends a year, are surely worthy of great respect and admiration. Dale Earnhardt had style. He wasn't like anyone else. He was his own man who did things his own way. He was the all-American success story, and if truth be told, I'll bet that deep down each and every one of us has that desire inside to make it, and to make it big, just as Dale Earnhardt did. He inspired countless thousands. He helped hundreds and hundreds of people throughout his all-too-short life and never spoke a word about it. And he knew what he stood for and never rolled over and turned his back on what he believed was right. He was a man of principle. He was, in many ways, someone who we could all learn from and, in our own way, emulate. Across the world, not just the world of motorsport, there are millions of people who make a difference. There are people who come to this world and leave behind a legacy for us, all of us who remain, to learn from and to preserve. On his 70th birthday, I would like to celebrate the life and career of this great American legend, my hero, Dale Earnhardt.
Philip, thank you so much. And why don't we take a quick break? And we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, I am Takuma Sato. You're listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And Mr. Rogers, the second round of the IndyCar Championship was at St. Petersburg. 20-minute drive for me, so I was there on Saturday. Had a chance to do a nice interview with Enzo Fittipaldi and enjoyed the race. A beautiful place, nice weather, and a pretty decent crowd given the situation. And the race was won by Colton Herta, the son of Brian Herta, and he drives for Michael Andretti's team. And now everybody is going gaga that he should be in Formula One. But I think this kid is very competitive. He raced in Europe, and he's a good kid, young. He is a tailor-made for Penske or Chip Ganassi, and I would hate to see him go drive for a team that cannot get into the top 10 when he has opportunity to be with race and championship winning teams here in the American Series. So that's just my personal opinion, but very impressive job for him. Now, some sad news, sir. Bill Whittington, a controversial figure, he was killed in a plane crash in Winslow, Arizona, a couple of days ago. And of course, you know, he raced at Indy with his two brothers. He won the Le Mans with Klaus Ludwig. And of course, people who follow IMSA sports car racing would know him from his sad involvement in drug smuggling back in the day. And there was always a talk because, you know, they would come up with good Porsche cars and no sponsorship and at Indy with no money. And there's always a question, where is the money coming from? But anyway, sad ending, and our condolences to the Whittington family. Talking of family, Jan Magnussen and K-Mag, Kevin Magnussen, will be at Le Mans 24 hours this year, which I believe is taking place in September. Is that correct, Mr. Francais?
I think it's August.
August? Okay, so that's good. Man, I just hope this COVID thing go away so we can... I'm getting my second vaccine, by the way, on tomorrow on Tuesday. And I just heard a news flash earlier today that Europe may welcome vaccinated people from the U.S. So there is hope I may I can catch a Formula One race at Monza or maybe Le Mans. We'll see how it works out. But I'm really missing motor racing very much. And sir, Talladega, Brad Keselowski, who drives for whom he calls Mr. Penske, he won the race and he only led one lap, but the most important. And I watched that race and I really enjoyed it. Did you watch any of the action from Talladega, Alabama, sir?
Absolutely. This is super speedway country. This is Dale Earnhardt country, by the way. So in celebration of Dale being 70 years old in a few days, I decided to watch this race, and it was crazy. And you thought that, what's the Italian guy? Di Toto Bene?
Di Benedetto?
I thought he was going to win, but you got to watch these serious contenders lurking in the background. All of a sudden, they pounce, and they win.
Yes, and Michael McDowell also did very well, so good to see this action. And, you know, super speedway racing is very impressive, and when it comes to NASCAR, nothing beats their last five laps. You know, there's going to be the big one and harem scarum, so very impressive. And, you know, Mr. Pegler has agreed to go to the Daytona 500 with me next year, so I may have to go to Talladega next year also, which is not too far from Tampa, Florida, by the way. Okay, sir, now we come to famous last words. Today they come from Nico Hülkenberg, and he was doing an interview with a magazine, and they asked him about how close he came to signing with Red Bull. And I feel sorry for him, but this is what he said. And I quote, "I better not watch Red Bull or I will cry. I don't think about it. I've been in talks with the team throughout the second half of last year. When Perez started to do really well, that victory in Bahrain, then it was over." End of quote. But I'm glad that Nico Hülkenberg has a reserve role at Aston Martin. Who knows? Maybe Sebastian Vettel will walk away this season, and as some people are predicting, and one German goes out, another German gets in. So we shall see how it will work out.
I like it, Nasser. One German coming in, one German going out. You never know what German is coming up. Nas, this week's interview, Christopher DeHardy. We've been talking to this young man for years. We've seen him graduate from the University of Louisiana, LSU, and now he's a professional journalist on motorsports. Nasser, introduce this young man.
Yes, Chris DeHardy needs no introduction, and we are very proud of him, what he has done. Always a pleasure talking to him, very knowledgeable about motorsports, living near Indianapolis area. And if I go to the Indy 500, hopefully him and I can get together for breakfast in America at Bob Evans. And I thank him for his time, and I wanted to ask him questions about the IndyCar series. So it's great conversation. Hope our listeners enjoy this. And Chris, thank you one more time. Okay, folks, here in Barber Motorsports Park, one of our original listeners and a budding F racing journalist, Mr. Chris DeHardy. Chris, good to see you. How are you?
You know, with the weather looking like this, if someone asked me to dial up race car weather, this is what I would do. And right now, I can't feel any better right now. I mean, there's not really a cloud in the sky. It's gorgeous out here. We're about to see a really good IndyCar race, I think. And yeah, things couldn't be better.
Man, I am so blown away by this track. I think for fans, it's one of the best facilities I have seen anywhere in this world. You've been around the country. How do you rate this track from a fan's perspective?
It's probably one of the best in the country, really. Just in the way the place is run. I mean, there's a tram that goes around, and if you want to go from one place to the other, all you got to do is wait for the tram, and it'll take you to one of like 7 or 8 different stops. There's things to do on the backside of the course. The vantage points are fantastic, especially if you're looking around like turns two and three over in the what they call the Alabama roller coaster. And then on the backside of the course, you can see, because the course switch crisscrosses it over itself back and forth, you can see 2, 3, 4 lanes of cars going, you know, back and forth here and there. It's crazy. And not only that, but it requires a lot of commitment from the drivers, and you see that when you're watching at that part of the track.
Now, I'm so happy to see that IndyCar is regaining a lot of momentum it had before the split. What's your take on this, and how soon before it becomes a major sport and topples NASCAR as the big 800-pound gorilla of American motorsports?
That requires a lot of promotion. Promotion has been a little bit on the weak side of the open wheel side of motorsports now. I mean, you look at things like sprint car racing in the Midwest. I mean, it's some of the best racing you'll find, but is it promoted to a real national audience? I mean, not as much as I would like to see it. That's really a problem that racing has as a whole right now, is that promotion is lacking. And in NASCAR, too, even, you could argue, because back in the 90s, you had all these different consumer brands that got, you know, people invested into the sport. But as for the, you know, the series itself, IndyCar right now, its main strength is its driver roster. There are very few what you would call, you don't want to say slouches, because everyone's, you know, driving an IndyCar that's a very powerful machine, but, you know, this field from top to the bottom is, you know, stacked with talent. I mean, you look at, you know, the top guys like, you know, Joseph Newgarden, Scott Dixon, you know, all the way to, you know, up-and-comers like Colton Herta and Pato O'Ward, and then, you know, you got the quote-unquote rookie class where you have Scott McLaughlin, you know, coming in from 3 straight Supercars titles in Australia. Well, it could have been 4 straight. You've got Romain Grosjean, who drove in Formula One for a long time. And then you've got some guy named Jimmy Johnson. You know, massive, massive success in NASCAR coming over here to the open wheel side of things. It's incredible just the amount of diversity you have in the rookie lineup at all. And I do want to say this too. None of them are coming in with any pretensions of, you know, success. They all know that there's a lot to learn and a lot to do. I mean, I talked to Romain Grosjean on Friday, and he said that one of the biggest things for him is learning how to do the strategy, because the last time he did refueling in his life was in 2009. He's never had to deal with that in Formula One since, you know, he drove the last half of that year for Renault. So everybody knows there's work to do, that the drivers here are talented, and let's just get on with the show.
Before we talk about changing of the guard, talking of the guy named Jimmy Johnson, do you think he will have any success here, especially compared to what he did in NASCAR?
I think success for Jimmy Johnson is defined on his terms, not on ours. I mean, yeah, he's been last in both practices on Saturday. He's starting 21st in the race that we're about to see here in a few minutes. He was last in the morning warm-up, but I think a successful weekend for Jimmy Johnson will be making sure he can have the car on the trailer with 4 tires on it and not make any mistakes. You know, he's driven a stock car now for 20 years and also a sports car in that time at the Daytona 24 Hours a few times. You know, he's had to unlearn everything he's done over the last 20-plus years driving a tube-frame sedan where your seating position is offset to the left-hand side. He actually drove a Formula 3 or FR Regional, Formula Regional America's car around this track and around a few others trying to figure out the open-wheel perspective. And really, success for him, making sure he finishes the race. Now, will he finish on the lead lap? I'm thinking he's going to probably be one lap down if he does make it to the end of the race. Will he see more success later on this year? Probably, but it'll all depend on how he's been able to take what he's learned from this weekend and apply it to future races.
How do you think he'll do at the Brickyard?
Well, he's not running the 500, at least not this year. Might try it next year. At the road course there, I would say it depends on how well he does at Barber and at St. Petersburg. If he can learn a lot here and apply it towards the future races that he's going to do, I could see him trying to aim for the top half of the field. Let's have that be our objective, is the top half of the field. I think that would be a good way of saying that he could succeed, is having a top half of the field result.
Mr. Penske always provides first-class equipment to his drivers, but last few years, Will Power has been missing his last name from his performance. What's going on there?
Sometimes racing drivers just have, slumps here and there for whatever reason. You look at a guy like, we mentioned Will Power, but I want to bring up Simon Pagenaud into this. In 2016, he started off that season with 3 wins and 2 second places. In 2019, he ended the year with, 8 or 10 straight top 10 finishes. If you are able to put together both of those in a single season, you win a championship, no doubt. Now, granted, Simon won the title in 2016, but I digress. Power, when he won his title in 2014, was very consistent that year. He had very few mistakes. Maybe he's had some pressure get to him that has caused him to have a couple of things go wrong, but he is getting older, and sometimes you don't have all the reflexes you might have had when you were in 2010, 2011, 2012, when he was just rattling off win after win after win. But no matter what people can say about Will's form going down, he is still if I recall correctly, the second winningest driver on the grid today, behind just Scott Dixon. He still knows how to drive a car fast. And if Penske lets him go, or if Will decides to walk, he will have a job within 10 minutes.
So, in other words, we can call him Sebastian Vettel of Penske organization. Moving on to changing of the guard, we're seeing that in Formula One. Pato O'Ward has done a great job in this country, and so has Colton Herta. Are these the Rick Mears and, I would say, let's say, Michael Andretti and Paul Tracy of the future?
I would say yes. The challenge, I think, is going to be making sure that they stay in America, because Formula One is extremely attractive, especially if you're given an offer by Mercedes or Red Bull. Can't say the other team, because right now their car is not 100% the best, but if they can stay in America, that would be a big boom for the IndyCar series. We haven't had a great big Mexican star in IndyCar since Adrian Fernandez. Now, we did have Mario Dominguez for a small amount of time, but he did not have the staying power that Adrian Fernandez had. Colton Herta, he's 21 years old. Pato is the same age. He turns 22, actually, in, I think, a couple of 2 or 3, 4 weeks now. They have staying power and can drive this sport forward for the next 2 decades. Now, keeping them in America is a challenge, but it depends on perspective. Now, when Rick Mears, he had a test for Brabham back in the day, but he decided, do I really want to do all that traveling, going all these different places? He even said in an interview, he wants a 7-Eleven on every corner. So if these guys, want to stay, in one place, not have to worry about, going all over the place, then they can be a great boom for this series, but only time will tell.
I can see Pato O'Ward and Colton Herta at the local Taco Bell anytime. Okay, now moving forward.
Not the one in Speedway. That one actually shut down.
After 2 drivers got robbed?
Yes, that is correct. That Speedway, that Taco Bell and Speedway was shut down.
Okay. Okay, now question for you. Who will win the biggest race in the world this year? The Indy 500.
If you are a trends person and you believe in history repeating itself, then there are only 2 drivers that will win the 500 this year. It'll be either Takuma Sato or it will be Juan Montoya.
Monty is always very, very exciting, and so is Sato, but he's prone to crashing. How do you think Monty will do this year?
And the 500, if McLaren are able to give him the same car that they give Pato and Felix, Tata no problem. But like I said, you know, if you believe in trends and history repeating itself, he's going to get his third win. Here's why I say that. AJ Foyt won his first win in 1961. 10 years later, Alan Chisinger won his second. 10 years after that, Bobby Unser got his third. 10 years after that, Rick Mears got his fourth. 2001, Elio gets his first. 2011, Dan gets his second. So who gets their third in 2021? It's either going to be Sato or Montoya.
Boy, I had no idea you were such a mathematical genius. I love it. Okay, now, what else can we talk about? Okay, one thing I've always reminded when I talk to you, among many other things, is you're very knowledgeable on the road to Indy. So let's talk about young American drivers. Because I know some years ago you were pounding on me on Oliver Askew, and he is very, very talented. Now I want to ask you about two young kids, American kids, who I think are pretty good. Your take on Kyle Kirkwood and Stingray Robb.
So Stingray, what I love about Stingray is that he's not afraid to make sure that you know that that is his real name. He's very proud of it. Rob Howden was calling a kart race that Stingray was in and said, I'm just going to call this kid Ray Robb. I'm not going to use a nickname for him. And then Stingray went up to him and said, Mr. Howden, my name is Stingray. It is on my birth certificate. So he's very proud of who he is, where he comes from. Kyle Kirkwood, he has 21 wins on the road to Indy. He's only three away from tying Spencer Pigot's record for most road to Indy wins. But my big worry about Kyle is that he has spent a lot of time driving in the Lexus car in the IMSA WeatherTech series for Vassar Sullivan. And he does have to kind of get himself kind of set back into an open wheel mindset. That being said, Kirkwood did not start off his Indy Pro 2000 campaign in 2019 on necessarily the best foot, but he did come through to win the championship, winning like, what, nine races by year's end, I think. So if Kirkwood can repeat his 2019 form, he will win the Indy Lights championship with no problem. The problem is that the field in Indy Lights is pretty stacked. You've got Toby Sowery there from the UK. Robert McGinnis is back from New York City. You've got Stingray Robb. He's from Idaho. You've got David Malukas from Chicago. You've got a lot of guys that are looking to, you know, not let him win.
Okay, the investigative journalist that you are, probing journalist, what is the story on Oliver Askew losing his seat? And I was very disappointed to see that happen.
Well, I think it boils down to is that he wasn't diagnosed with a concussion. He may not have had concussive symptoms at the month. You know, so what happened was he hit the wall at the Indianapolis 500 trying to avoid Connor Daly, who was spinning on a restart. And it looked like his car never slowed down when it hit the inside pit wall. And he hit it very hard. It's probably the hardest hit he's ever had in his racing career. Because in Indy Pro 2000, I don't think I ever recalled him actually wrecking in U.S. at 2000. He had like a light wall tap at Toronto and I think something else at a Mid-Ohio test. He had like one wreck in Indy Lights at St. Pete. Other than that, I don't recall him crashing. I mean, he had the crash of the Indy Grand Prix and the Indy car, but you know, that was just a one and done easy. I think what happened was that as time went on, he may have realized he had a balance issues, but I don't think he connected the dots properly that it was a concussion that may not have, you know, been diagnosed because everything was fine at first. And I think him not knowing that, it might have led to them thinking, well, the reason why he was off is because he hid this from us. And I don't think Oliver would on purpose hide a concussion, probably because he didn't know he had one. Or at least I think he didn't know he had one. I shouldn't put that on him. But when I mentioned to you that Oliver Askew was, you know, someone to look for way back in 2017 when he ran in USF 2000, you know, that was his first ever street race. He finished second that first one, and then he won the next five races in a row in that USF 2000 season to win that title. In my opinion, he has all the right stuff to be a good IndyCar driver, a very good IndyCar driver. What he lacks, quite honestly, is the one thing that makes race cars go around and around and around. Money. A lot of some drivers come from very wealthy backgrounds and deal with scholarships. That's what funded his racing career, was scholarships. And he was lucky to get the Indy Lights ride in 2019. He said that deal came together like a week or two before the season started. And that scholarship is basically what helped pay for him. The one that he won, one of the Indy Lights, winning the Indy Lights title, is what helped pay for his ride at Arrow McLaren SP. Once the money dried up and they realized what had happened, he was out the door. And let's face it, Felix Rosenqvist, he's not a slouch either.
Okay, finally, tell us what Chris DeHardy has been doing lately and what's in store for your racing future.
So I recently announced that I am the new co-editor for the IndyCar side of FrontStretch.com. They have a large NASCAR audience, but they do not have as big of an open wheel audience. So my job is to try and help build that up. And then on occasion, I'll do some other short track things here and there. In fact, I actually covered the World of Outlaws for the Indianapolis Star the week before coming here. If you've never seen the World of Outlaws in person, do yourself a favor and please do so, because those cars are absolutely crazy. And then other than that, I've just been working at my other job and trying to find out other things I can do in racing to try and get out to the track more. This is what I want to do for the rest of my life, you know what I mean?
Thank you very much, sir. And message for fellow listeners?
Make sure that you support your local tracks. Sometimes we see these, short tracks not have as big of a bigger crowds. Try and support your local tracks, and please take friends out to the track. I can't stress to you enough how disheartening it is to go to a short track show and see, three quarters to almost all the crowd being older people, and they'll take their kids, but sometimes you go to these tracks and you won't see anybody under 30 there by themselves. So please support your local tracks, whether they're short tracks, whether they're road courses, whatever, and pick up racing anywhere you can.
Thank you, sir.
Chris, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Please say hi to your mom and dad for me. Nasser, let's wrap it up.
Yes, sir. Formula One is going to be in full swing pretty soon, Mr. Rogers. We've got great tracks coming up, and it's amazing how fast time is flying. I'm very, very excited about a second U.S. Grand Prix next year. Just 4-hour drive for me. Looking forward to it. And I think this race in Miami is going to be very, very... This is going to be craziness as far as fans are concerned, like we see at Monza, Silverstone, and Suzuka, because the city is very cosmopolitan. There's a lot of interest, a lot of tourists come there anyway. So I think this will be a big, big success. So I'm very excited. I am hoping, I don't know what the situation will be at Circuit of the Americas, COTA in Texas this year, but if they allow fans, I will go if I can get a media pass, which is very, very restricted these days, understandably so. But if I can get it even as a spectator, I will definitely go, because it's a great track and I need to see a red car and a silver car, which is now black these days. I want to see Aston Martin and I want to see Alpine, and Machismo, man, will be there too. Nando. So that will be very good.
Outstanding, Nas. Keep up the good work. And the best part about the Miami Grand Prix is Miami's not very politically correct, and they said that they will have super hot Latina grid girls.
Muy interesante.
Gracias, señor y señoritas. Nasser, keep up the good work. I want to thank everybody who listens. We'll see you at the taco stand.
Thank you. Bye-bye.